welcome to the Bulwark Daily. I'm your host, Tim Miller. We have managing editor Sam Stein back on the show, and here's why. I'm going to tell you why. We're still at the end of the August doldrums, okay? We're at the end of August. I don't know what Trump is doing, if he's getting a facelift, he's just bleeding all day, but like he has been like a little less on the crazy lately as far as the new news is concerned. That's one thing. Where everybody's kind of getting back into school, they want a little fun. So I was like, what can we do this week to loosen it up a little bit? Sam's laugh is one thing. People have been counting about his new beard, and they're a little worried about him. I received some texts of concerns that Sam is
was on
vacation, getting into the hard drugs. And so, what we're gonna do here is we have a mailbag for you and the cabinet rankings. We're just gonna have fun, and we might dabble in some conspiracies because it's important to have fun and dabble in conspiracies. Because I was looking at the YouTube rankings. And the shit that is still in front of us, Sam, there is lefty conspiracy theories. Jimmy Dore is beating me. Do you know Jimmy Dore? He was doing a segment about whether Charlie Kirk was hit with a drone this week. That's beating me. Okay. The right-wing nonsense.
Sorry, one second. Was the segment that Charlie Kirk this week was hit with a drone?
Really a gunshot. It was a drone. Gotcha. And it was a pretty precise drone, I gotta say. Like just the neck. Okay, didn't hit anybody else there at Utah University.
How big was this drone?
Small. So, you know, and then you got all the right-wing losers beating us, Candace, Megan. And so I'm just like, this might be the path, Sam. Begging people to subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, click the subscribe and also doing the types of content that people want, which is Natalie Harp conspiracies.
Yeah, I don't want to like beg people because that looks a little desperate, but like you guys should be out there. You guys should be subscribing as a way to bolster the idea that you don't have to dive so deep into the conspiracy land in order to be a success in this industry. Like help us prove the premise that you can be sane and still attract an audience.
Just some light thoughts about, I am dabbling in some light thoughts about whether Natalie Harp is Russian or about her health history, her story, her brother, the communist. I have a lot of thoughts. Anyway, we'll get into all that at the end.
Okay.
Serious news first.
Yes.
Almost like 15 minutes of seriousness, 40 minutes of Sam interrupting me and laughing. New York Times this morning has done the analysis on the soaring number of arrests that ICE has done for non-criminals. It's been happening this summer. Thousands of people who had not previously been the focus of the mass deportation campaign have gotten rounded up. They included people married to U.S. citizens, including one that we sent to Central African Republic. People who had entered legally and were pursuing an asylum claim. And then obviously the Haitians and others with temporary legal status that the administration pushed to revoke. We have a chart we'll put up for the video folks right now. And you can just see it's just like hockey stick go up. Of people who are being detained who have no criminal history, no issues at all. And that's what they're doing to get their numbers.
Why do you think they're doing this? I mean, that was a question I was kind of asking. I had a couple theories.
Let's hear your theory.
Well, one is that Mark Wayne Mullen had this brief period of time where people were mad at him. There was those two deaths, and then they made some sort of policy change where they weren't going to do the traffic stop arrests, and then everyone freaked out on the right about Mark Wayne, and so I think he recalibrated. That's one theory. The other is that Trump's got nothing else really going on, and all the foreign policy stuff is distracting, and so he's going back to his bread and butter. But those are the only ones I have, and I don't know if you have any other profound thoughts.
I would add to that. I mean, look, this is – basically, immigration and trade are the two things where there's any ideological coherence at all. Like, they're very committed to a whites-only immigration policy, and they're very committed to deporting people. I do think that there's a genuine ideological effort, and this is the easiest way to do it. I mean, if you want to get people out of the country, the easiest way to do it is to go nab the people that you have in the system already. Right? Like if you are a TPS, like you filed for TPS, we have your address. If you have a job, you're paying taxes. Like the government can find you very easily, right? And they can find like the worst criminals too, right? Because that you went into jail. But like there's this, that gray area of trying to find people who snuck in here, right? Like who that's a lot harder.
That's a good point. So like you start with the people who are in jail already and you ask the states for the records so that you can go and get them, throw them out. low-hanging fruit. You go after people who have work visas or who are here with some documentation, TPS status, and you go after them because you can track them down. Then it becomes a little harder, and you can't just use the vehicle stops. You can, I guess, but it's going to backfire. But then you start looking for different ways to nab them. And so one story in particular stood out to me, like literally yesterday, and I guess it stood out to me because it's my home state, Connecticut, but Senator Chris Murphy tweeted that there were ICE arrests happening, parents at school bus stops. So like, that seems both
sick
and cruel and awful and inhumane. But it, to your point, it's like if you are trying just simply to get numbers and you know you got to find people and you can't just knock on the door and enter, like you start looking for places like bus stops at school districts that have a lot of immigrant kids. And it's awful. I mean, what they're doing is a collective trauma. And the idea that a parent has to wake up, you know, you're a parent, I'm a parent. Getting your kid ready for school is a pain in the fucking ass, and it's chaos every morning. Imagine adding to that the additional element of whether or not you're going to ever see your kid again. Yeah. And just think about that.
Exactly. The other people that have been showing up for ICE check-ins, you know, the asylees, right? Racial targeting, Kavanaugh stops, right? Like, that's it. So that's what they're doing. Like, they're doing less of, like, the ASMR porn of, like, hey, we have these people in chains, and we're putting out social media. They are doing less of that. But, like, they have killed two people this summer, right? I think that it's just that, like, because of some of the circumstances, they're immigrants, you know, you're going to have more outrage and backlash if it's white American citizens that are being killed. Let's just be honest, right? And the video element, like the videos of Good and Preddy were just so, there's so many angles. It was so striking and it was summary execution in the streets. But, like, they are still continuing on with the other parts of this too. And with Maine, Houston, we've seen.
And the other thing is they have like seemingly unlimited funds to do this, right? Totally. It'd be one, and this is why it was so pernicious to give them all this money. Because if you have like a resource check on you, you start prioritizing, you do the things that actually matter and you don't just like spray and pray. But they have so much money to spend. You know, there was a story yesterday that kind of got under the radar, but Kilmore Abrego Garcia, the sort of original big immigration story, you know, he's still not deported. Like, his case is 16 months in. It's still going on. And it really comes down to this, which is the government wants to send him to Liberia. His lawyer says he has no attachment.
They want to send him to Liberia. Siberia?
Liberia.
Oh, Liberia. Might as well. Just kind of hot.
Keep going east. He wants to go to Costa Rica. Costa Rica, so they tell him, take him. Literally, the government can just say, cool, we'll send you to Costa Rica and be done with it. But because they can spend unlimited money, they're just willing to incur the cost of litigating this thing for, I don't even know what the reason is at this juncture, but they can just take the legal cost and eat him. And so you have stupid shit like this happening all over the place.
Yeah. Little rumor that was flagged for us this morning that you know, we know this type of stuff is happening, but like whether it's actually happening on Friday, but some immigration advocates had reached out and said the government has a flight for Afghans and Iranians that are going to the Central African Republic on Friday, you know, including Afghans that helped us.
What is going on? Why are we sending them all to these African countries? Do we have some sort of mineral deal that, like, you know, we're getting in exchange? I feel like that's probably the other side of it.
Yeah. I mean, look, well, part of it is like they avoid, you know, any issues with Trump. I mean, all of these places have huge human rights violations.
Right.
In Central African Republic, like the story of the man that as aforementioned, like has a U.S. citizen wife, is Cuban immigrant. Like, this was like these types of people I thought that the Republicans were for, like the people fleeing communism, and they didn't send him to Cuba. They sent him there. He like doesn't know it. He has no money. He's in the middle of Central African Republic. You can't get work there. Like, what are you supposed to do?
I don't know.
It's fucking insane what we're doing to these people.
It's wild.
Okay. So rumors that's happening on Friday. And I do think this is, again, we've seen, you know, this is a whack-a-mole thing, but we do see reactions to this when there is public outrage. So I do encourage people to continue writing their representatives about this. You know, we got Katie Britt to actually, we got her to put out a statement, baby.
You did. Whatever. I know. Yeah. And thank God. I was on vacation when you were doing this whole thing, but I noticed and I was very happy. And honestly, and I don't mean this in like a shallow way, I was proud like that you were doing this shit. Because Katie Britt, like, it bothers me that she glossed on to this poor kid in Texas as like something she was crying about and couldn't stop thinking about. And then she stopped thinking about it.
Did a whole New York Times takeout.
Like, I can't stop thinking about this guy until Friday when I'm going to stop thinking about this guy.
The classic New York Times picture of the, you know, person looking longingly out the window. They love that picture. It's like a pinup picture of her. And she's like, what?
And she had I think she had the State of the Union response, or I forget what she had some speech or something like that.
No, she had a horrible State of Union response during the Biden era, where she was in the kitchen and it was like Scream 2. It looked like Scream 2. There are the knives.
There was some other speech she gave. I was thinking about that one. But there's some other speech she gave where she was like, didn't mention this kid who she apparently couldn't stop thinking about. I was like, she deserves all of it.
The knives in the kitchen with the State of the Union response, that was one of the weirder things that will stick with me from the 2020s. I just remember texting my friends being like, do I have Trump derangement syndrome or is this the weirdest shit you've ever seen in your life? And everybody like, it's so weird.
Yeah, it was the airy voice. Yeah.
I want to talk about the midterms a little bit. There's this report in The Atlantic that really tickles me. Trump had an Oval Office meeting about how to spend their super PAC money. One of kind of the less covered elements of the corruption of this administration is how they're driving people, corporations mostly, but also rich people to give huge amounts of money to their super PAC. And in part because it's like, administrations always did this kind of like on a small level, like, which like, well, you know, one good way to get response back from the candidate is to like donate to the super PAC. Like, so this isn't like so different. Like a lot of the other stuff that Trump is doing is like unprecedented corruption. But like he is doing it on just a hypercharged scale. Like the reports I hear of like people, you know, like Brian Ballard, like the close lobbyists, like clients call them, be like, can we hire you to lobby? And it's like, yeah, the entry fee is whatever, 50 grand a month or whatever, but also you got to give $1 million to MAGA Inc. and like MAGA Inc. Super PAC, and then we'll take you. Like just crazy levels of corruption. So they have all this money. Like they've been, like, they just had, they, one unprecedented part of this is just how much money is in their super PAC right now. For the midterms, a lot of Democratic strategists I've talked to are worried about this. And we have maybe a silver lining because Trump called all the strategists in the Oval Office, according to three people familiar with the meeting, according to The Atlantic. He told them he thinks that they should spend the money on ads that focus on him. The president wants a series of ads focused on his own record. He suggested that the ad makers mine his own on-camera statements as the building blocks. Quote, go look at the clips, the president told the team. I cite accomplishments all the time.
You're in comms prior to this. Like, come on. How many times have you been with a candidate who's like, we just need to advertise better about me, right? Like, that's like a classic. That's the problem. We're not doing enough ads about how great I am. Why? He's got like 400 million. I don't want to get the figure
400
out.
Million, I think.
It's something crazy. I've been wondering like why he hasn't spent this. We're what, 68 days away?
He spent some of it. They spent, I think, 800 grand to help Darlene Graham.
800 grand.
He spent some money to beat Thomas Massey.
400th of the total.
Some money to beat Thomas Massey, I think. So they spent a little bit in the primaries.
Don't you think it's getting a little late in the game? I mean, like, what are they waiting for? If I were a Republican, I'd be a little bit upset. You're sitting on all this money, and it's like you're going to let us just get killed here.
The strategist I was talking to was worried about. I'm thinking of one conversation I had in Iowa in particular. I'm talking to the Iowa Democratic Party folks, and they're like, "Look, we feel pretty good about Sand. Obviously, run a good race. I've had in the polls. We talked about that with Neer yesterday. Turek, you know, kind of a coin flip. Good candidate, bad year. Like the thing that they're the most worried about, though, is like, you know, Iowa still went to Trump by 11 or 12 last time, and they're worried that they have this huge, you know, war chest. That it's hard in advertising to like convince people in farm country that things are great when they're shitty. But it's kind of easy in advertising to go talk to Republicans about how the Democrat is crazy, right? And so that's what they were worried about, that like that they'll just be able to keep a lid on the Democratic ability to win over Trump voters because there'll just be so much advertising, you know, talking about how they're Sharia law communists, you know, that, you know, want to, you know, seize their farmland and give it to China or whatever that they do. And if they don't use the money for that, and they use it instead for these ads that could maybe even backfire, that are just like Mr. Trump being like, things are great. Look at my agenda. Best economy ever. Yeah. Golden age. Like that would be a dream come true, really.
I would love to see the ad that Trump if like Trump actually gotten into the business of making the ad himself and picking the accomplishments. You said early up top that it's been like a less than crazy week for Trump, and I guess so. But I was also sort of perusing his Truth Social feed yesterday. Yeah. he put up 5 posts in an hour about how clean the waterfall is at Meridian Hill Park in D.C. I was just like, whoa.
This is what I think is happening. I think he's getting the hair transplant. He's sitting around, you know, you can't go out, and so he's just bleeding.
Sure. Well, my point is, would an ad that he crafted for the midterms include a lot of footage of Meridian Hill Park and the Iowans being like, what the fuck is this park? Why? This is not in...
Look at the big, beautiful fountain. Look at the big, beautiful fountain now. It used to be homeless people and drugs happening here.
And they called it Malcolm X Park. Obviously, if it's a bunch of ads focused on Trump and that's how they spend their money, Democrats would be positively thrilled. Both because they want to make the election about Trump, and then to your larger point, which is more interesting, is that I think the only way Republicans do pull this thing out is to figure out a way to somehow both depress Democratic votes, which I don't think is going to happen because I think Democrats are at this point willing to just absolutely do anything, but to more or less compel those fence sitters to just say, I'd rather not vote than vote Democrat. I don't think they're going to be able to juice turnout that much on their side of the aisle. If I had to guess.
And look, Trump won. If you look at this, Sarah was really good on this 2024, talking about the double haters. Mm-hmm. And not to trigger everybody by going back to 2024, what happened. Right. But basically what happened is like Trump won in 16 and 24 because he won the double haters, and Biden won in 20 because Biden won them, like essentially is like what happened. And I mean, obviously it's more complicated than that, but that is true.
But the thing here is there's not a second person to hate. Right, like
well,
that's the issue.
I guess the point is that like if you get these like Republicans that are unhappy with Trump but also don't like the Democrats, if you can get them to turn out anyway and hold their nose for Trump, and in a place like Iowa, I think that's a tougher sell. In some of these states, in a place like Iowa, even older electorate, they're used to voting. They might go vote anyway, and it's like, okay, well, I'm unhappy with Trump, but I'm not going to vote for 2 Democrats. Maybe I'll vote for Rob Sand. I just think that that's the best case that they have.
What's Ann Seltzer poll in this race? Too soon.
Sam.
Too soon.
Sam.
Too soon.
Sam.
Sorry.
I almost had a stroke right there. Hold on. What am I supposed to talk about next? Oh, I had one other thing.
Yeah.
Fucking Ann Seltzer, dude. Honestly. I'm gonna be an old man.
I remember exactly where I was when that poll came out, and I remember slacking with you and Sarah, and we did a take right away, and we were just like, the vibes were so great.
Yeah, the take only has my picture in the thumbnail because it gets sent to me about once a month by MAGA people. Not upset at Ann at all about that. Okay, the other bleat that Trump sent. This is hilarious.
I love this one.
Trump is so mad at Congress. He simultaneously thinks he's done all these things he's not getting credit for, and that the Republicans in Congress are cucks, right? And so Trump doesn't realize like how this looks, I guess, but he re-bleats, whatever you want to call it, a post from a guy who writes the following. This is on Trump social media. Matt is the guy's name. Right wing nut job. And he wrote this. I don't think the GOP fully grasps how badly they are fucking up right now. I'm talking to people who normally have zero interest in politics, who are legitimately pissed off. They're not seeing the major reform they thought would happen, and they're really mad about it. No true accountability, no true mass deportations. Okay. No meaningful decrease in the deficit, lots of very long vacations and no work. People are pissed they voted Trump into office, and the GOP continues to slow walk every reform people want. Where are the Doge cuts? Where's the SAVE Act? People are waking up. They're not happy about it. People believe they're voting for the Trump agenda instead. Many feel like they're getting the same old Washington. If Republicans in Congress don't start producing results, they're going to discover that frustration has consequences. And by the time they realize that, it might be too late. Trump posted that because he sees that as an attack on Congress.
Yeah. I mean, so the most predictable thing is what happens when they lose in November. Like, Trump's not going to be like, yeah, that was on me. You know, I shouldn't have done that. It's going to be like John Thune fucked up and should have passed the SAVE Act and we would have won. And like everyone can see this one coming a million miles away. Thune can. So it should be fun.
It's pretty encouraging, actually, because if Trump has already accepted that it's a loss and he's just going to blame John Thune and Mike Johnson, and he doesn't even care about Congress anyway because he does whatever he wants on the things that he cares about, the ballroom via executive order. And that is kind of disincentivizes the cheating process. And I do think that, sure, they already tried to cheat with the gerrymandering and they'll keep trying to cheat. But like, to have the will to really create problems, like, you need Trump to be fully locked in on that. Like, he was fully locked in on the Stop the Steal, right? And it kind of seems like he's like pretty locked in on the East Wing. Well,
let's be clear about that, though, because the fully locked in on Stop the Steal came after the election.
Right. That's right. True.
Like, so we don't know. Like, it's possible that, yeah, it's possible we wake up on November 4th or whatever, and it's relatively close, and Trump's like, oh man, I could really fuck with this shit.
That's true. You know? For sure. I've been more worried about the post than the pre for a while.
Yeah.
This is just a story I just wanted to cover briefly because we haven't talked about it. And I guess you did an interview. Was it you that did the interview?
I re-listened to it. It was months ago. This story's been kind of on the low simmer for months.
It's about Ron DeSantis. And I guess people just don't care about Ron DeSantis anymore. He's on his way out. He has no hope to run for president anymore. You know, it's kind of like, okay, so it's hard to kind of get people's dander up about outrage. But it's a pretty shocking story. A state grand jury found the DeSantis administration, quote, misappropriated taxpayer money when it diverted $10 million from a Medicaid settlement into the Hope Florida Foundation. From the Hope Florida Foundation, they had a sophisticated scheme where they passed that money through multiple organizations before landing in the bank accounts of two PACs and the Republican Party of Florida. Those funds were then used to defeat a legalized marijuana ballot initiative. So to sum up, like, the grand jury found basically that they took Medicaid money, should be going to healthcare for poor people, and used it instead to give to DeSantis' friends, political consultants, to do ads against a legalized marijuana ballot initiative.
To which I ask, where is Nick Shirley? Where's Nick Shirley?
Where's Nick Shirley?
Where's my man? He's got to get on this one. It's such a convoluted story, and that pretty much summarizes it. But there are a few components. I re-listened to the interview I did with the reporter who broke this story, and it's even crazier in a way. So basically, this Medicaid settlement happened with this company that overcharged states for prescription drugs. And a lot of states trumpeted the fact that they had this settlement. One state that did not trumpet the fact that they had this settlement was Florida. They kept it very quiet. No one knew that Florida had gotten $67 million in this settlement. It was just not there. And then they were talking about separately this Hope Florida initiative, which, to summarize more or less, is like, we are going to use state administrators to take people who would normally be on food stamps or whatever government assistance programs and send them to churches. That's what Hope Florida does. It was a Casey DeSantis initiative. Somehow Hope Florida got a $10 million infusion and no one really knew where it came from. Well, if you dug into it, what happened was is that they took $10 million from the $67 million settlement that they never announced, sent it to Hope Florida. But then they didn't just keep it in Hope, Florida. They took that $10 million, as you know, and put it to these anti-marijuana initiatives that they were trying to defeat in the state of Florida. And all this, which is crazy and undocumented and done basically by executive fiat, had the sign-off of really big players in the DeSantis orbit, including the current state attorney general, apparently, and then Ashley Moody, who is now a senator.
The attorney general is just like basically a groiper. I had some random guy that was like, you know, one of these, you know, the people who wants me to call more balls and strikes, be like, why don't you go up to the Democrats more? Like, well, after Trump is going to be gone in 2 years, what kind of Republicans are coming behind? And I was like, you have no idea the type of Republicans that are in these
in the wings.
That are in the wings.
Yeah, go look at the New York Republican Party.
Yeah, it ain't George H.W. Bush as the Attorney General of Florida, let me tell you.
I look at this stuff and it's like so transparently corrupt, and it's unbelievable. And they're all like, well, I don't remember ever signing. Someone obviously fucking remembers that. It's like, do the Floridians look at this stuff and say, man, maybe we should try something new, right? Like, I guess I know, I understand the Florida Democratic Party is in shambles, and the people that they're putting up are quacks and crazies too, not all of them. But like, do you look at it and you're like, oof, you know, like, do we want this? Is this right? Like, maybe we should like dabble in something new.
I don't think David Jolly winning that governor's race is crazy. Donald's doesn't like what is happening inside his brain. It's just like the other day he was talking about how people who moved to Florida from blue states were stupid.
Oh yes.
And then like then yesterday I saw a clip of him where he was talking about how they're gonna one thing he's gonna work on is the roads and make sure there's no potholes so that the ladies have a nice smooth drive when they go to get their hair done.
I'll vote for that. Hell yeah. Okay. No one wants to have their hair bopping.
Anyway, I don't know. I think he's got a chance. All right. We're about to get to the fun part. But before we do, tomorrow's pod, I'm like obsessed with what's happening in Russia right now. The Russians and the Iranians are having a meeting. Trump might have stumbled into World War III. We sent our CIA director to Russia, I guess, to warn them not to invade NATO, but simultaneously, I think it's, reports seem like Russia is indicating that that since we're running out of materiel, maybe they are going to try NATO. We got serious foreign policy matters tomorrow. So do you have any other serious matters before we get to the cabinet rankings?
No, I've been waiting to do this, the fun shit for a while. This is too much serious shit already.
Yeah. Do you need a shot or something? You're a little low energy, Jeb. Right now, are you ready for the fun part?
I am not. Get the fuck out of here! Okay. I am not low energy.
All right, we'll start with this before we get to the cabinet rankings. Boy, do we love our fans in Canada. You know, Sam came with me and Sarah. The three of us had those live shows.
Trying to have a complicated history with Canada.
That's true. Canadians do get mad at you. I want to go back in 2027. I want to go back to Canada. We love all the listeners we have up there. See it in the numbers. And I don't know for sure if this reporter is a listener of the show, but they were at the Doug Ford press conference yesterday. And it seems like they probably listened to us just based on context clues. Let's listen.
You talked yesterday in your interviews about your confidence that a deal can be reached, but today you were talking about the problems that people like Howard Lutnick and other members of the administration present.
Nutlick has made it to Canada.
You've gone international. Unbelievable.
I love that. Howard Nutlick scuttled the deal. We'll see if he makes it to the cabinet rankings. For people have missed it, Sam and I have been doing this for a while now. Every quarter or so, we update our rankings of the worst members of the Trump's cabinet. Very competitive category. You know, it's really tough to narrow it down to the top five. You know, you've got to do a lot of pruning. The April rankings, I just want to remind people of, just kind of set a baseline. Sam had worst cabinet member Pete Hegseth, second worst RFK Jr., third Besant, fourth Chris Wright, sleeper, fifth Marco Rubio. In April, I also had Hegseth first. We had the same there. I had Rubio 2, Todd Blanche 3, RFK 4, and Brooke Rollins was my sleeper in the fifth slot, Secretary of Agriculture, who is bankrupting farm country and telling all of us that we should grow chickens in our backyard. So,
first of all, you don't grow chickens, motherfucker. Don't, like, plant them in the ground.
You don't? Pop. They don't grow? You get a chicken, you feed it, it grows. You grow a chicken. Is that not right?
Oh, like a fucking bush.
Okay. So, cabinet rankings now. I'm going to give you the members of the cabinet that kind of made my consideration list.
There's no way.
These were the nominees. Yeah, like, these were the nominees.
There's some out there who we just would never put in the five. And
yeah, well, it's just Mark Rubio, Besant, Hegseth, and Blanche.
Yeah.
In the four power ministries, obviously, we're going to consider all them.
Yeah.
Rollins isn't going to make the cut this time, so I did want to mention her.
Okay.
Nutlick, of course, RFK Jr., Sean Duffy, has really been making an ass out of himself lately. Linda McMahon at Education. I felt like she had to be nominated because just yesterday, did you see this?
No.
The Department of Education posted a video comparing Trump to Hitler.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
And then deleted it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where Linda McMahon is right now. We're doing Trump-Hitler videos. Russ Vogt, I like to throw in there. And I did want to mention, she's never made a top five. I don't know if she will this time. But Small Business Administration Administrator Kelly Loeffler.
Oh, is this because of that video?
did put out a video where she, I believe that she's not a human. I think I'm now increasingly think the aliens exist. I think that they're throwing us off the scent by releasing some of these supposed alien files.
Yeah.
And I think that Kelly Loeffler and Jared Kushner are non-human beings. They don't look comfortable at all in their own skin. They could be from Men in Black. And I think having an alien in the cabinet is concerning. So Those are kind of the nominees. Do you want to start with your fifth or first? Do you want to go first to fifth or fifth to first?
You didn't list someone who I have in my top five.
Oh, really? Who's that?
Marquain.
Oh, Marquain Mullen. Yes. He should have been in the nominee list. You're right.
Yeah.
It was an oversight. Okay. So then we so one more time with the possibilities. Kelly Loeffler, Russ Vogt, Marquain Mullen, Linda McMahon, Sean Duffy, RFK Jr., Nutlick, Blanche, Hegseth, Bessent, Rubio.
Right. He's not in my top five. I think he could have maybe cracked your, we should consider him rotation. Sure. Bergam, for all the reflecting pool nonsense and how shitty the America 250 thing was.
Thank you for bringing that up. Because he also has been managing the Department of Interior horribly. They're firing all kinds of people randomly.
Oh, yeah, like, and what's going on in Texas around the
Big Bend.
Big Bend.
Yeah, he was defending the Big Bend wall. Yes, it is despicable, actually, what he was doing to that man. The Olympian that did nothing. And after he was, it was announced that they weren't going to investigate him anymore, Bergam publicized that they still want to go after him more and that he did it.
He's maligning this guy. So, he's not in my top five. I would put him six. So just putting it out there. All right, you want my five?
Well, I think we'll just go one at a time here.
Well, five to one, as in like the least worst to the worst? Let's do that.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, who's your number five choice?
Blanche,
number five. Boy, that's tough. That shows you how competitive the category is.
It's a great field.
When Blanche is number five
There's a lot going wrong. But Blanche, you know, he sucks. What can you say? The weaponization shit, the fact that he wouldn't back away from it, the settlement on IRS auditing with Trump, just the way he kind of bulldozed the senators in the confirmation. And then, of course, obviously, DOJ is just... He's not even like hiding the ball that the DOJ is an arm for Trump. In fact, he's embracing it. So like, yeah, he probably could have been 4 or 3, but there's just real stuff.
That's hard. I mean, it's just really hard. The people I had to cut. All right, let's hear your number four.
Duffy makes his debut. I can't swallow this dumbass series that he put up about him vacationing across the country, not because the content's so shitty, which it is, and the way, like, he's like, you know what, like he's dropping infomercials in for like credit cards and stupid shit like that, and then on top of that, the way he's treating his daughter who wants to like be able to say, hey, can I apply to Harvard? No, they're gonna indoctrinate you. Like, it's so corrupt. He's just taking bribes. He cracks my top five.
And
also, it's personal. I've flown a couple times this summer. It fucking sucks. I'm sorry to curse so much for those in the car, but I've had horrible experiences. And I know that's not necessarily just his fault, but I blame him.
I thought you were going to say it's personal because you're still mending fences with the Canadians. And you're like, his smearing of them is not having a military when dead Canadians... You know, we're buried because they came to our defense after we were attacked in 9/11. We did nothing except try to steal their land and make fun of their beady little eyes. Horrible.
Yeah, that was bad. I didn't like that. And I should have put that in there too. Thank you for adding
it. Top four. Okay.
All right, you want my three?
I do.
Marquain. For all the reasons we articulated. Wow. Yeah. I mean, ICE is record-setting arrests and terrorizing parents and rumors of them like going now into, you know, Springfield, Ohio with the Haitians there. And it's like, No, not good, buddy. Not great.
Obviously, we led the segment with ICE. I did a whole video out this morning over on YouTube. You can watch about like just some specific horrifying stories. In spite of all that, Marquain doesn't make my list because the cabinet is so bad. And it's really Stephen Miller. Like, this is Stephen Miller. Marquain is a vessel for Stephen Miller.
He's
and
a
that
proxy.
Is the reason that why I don't use him. Duffy also didn't make my list. So we have two different members.
We got some divergence. Yeah. And my top two are the same as last time. I got RFK at two. My brother, we got measles deaths in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he's talking about natural measles being
a
great thing.
I want to pause here because I feel like, as just kind of a self-assessment of my work on this podcast, the RFK beat is the one that's the toughest for me to follow. I'm not only am I not 1/16th of a scientist like JVL, like my ACT score was brought down by like 3 points just based on my science category. Like I was at the top of the pops on math and all the other stuff. Science, I was like down at Forrest Gump levels. So it's hard for me to understand this stuff, and so I don't cover it as much. And so I'm asking, and you do, you and Cone, this is kind of your yeah. you know, among the things you're really locked in on. If you're going to put RFK at number two, I want like a 2-minute RFK hate where you explain right. what's been happening with him.
I don't know if 2 minutes is going to suffice, but needless to say, okay, there has been 2,800 cases of measles this year. That's the most in 3 decades. And this man has the audacity to say that's because of Joe Biden. Okay. He won't take ownership for the fact that he spreads nauseous, problematic, anti-vaccine nonsense across the country. And when kids die, which is happening, he then has the gall to go out there and tell the governor of Pennsylvania, you know what, natural measles may actually be the way to do it. On top of that, he oversees a bureaucracy that's tasked with making sure that our food supply is protected. In fact, this is a big feature of his political appeal. I'm going to make food great. And I can't buy a bag of fucking lettuce without worrying I'm going to have explosive diarrhea. So food's not particularly great. On top of that, beef's not particularly great. On top of that, food prices aren't particularly great. We don't know if we have proper food inspectors. If that was it, that would be enough. But it goes so far beyond there because we're standing on the cusp of incredible breakthroughs in cancer treatments. mRNA technology could make us have personalized immunotherapies for cancers if all goes according to plan. Wow. And RFK Jr. hates mRNA and has launched a campaign against it and has sat on top of a bureaucracy that has systematically gutted the federal investments in groundbreaking research, including into cancer research. And he has the audacity to say he wants to make America healthy again. That to me is an abdication of leadership. It's an indication that he is not fit for this role. And it's a sad, sad commentary that he somehow has stayed, not just in the cabinet, but atop our healthcare bureaucracy. So he is number two.
And number one for you is Pete Hegseth. Great job on that on RFK. Andy is a fucking brain worm.
Well,
and have you seen his diary and what happened to his wife? Okay, never mind. That's your top five. Sam, Hegseth, RFK, Mullen, Duffy, Blanche. Wow, we're going to have some divergence. So we're going to get to see some comments and let people know who they think is more in touch with the incompetence in this administration and who's doing the most damage. You do not even list my number one.
Come on.
So, you did not even list my number one.
Okay.
I'll just leave it like that. I'm going number five, RFK Jr. You covered it. I kind of didn't want to include him. I wanted to include Besant. We discussed Besant a lot on Tuesday. I've got some more Besant material coming in the mailbag. The two measles deaths this week pushed RFK over Besant. You know, once you start causing actual deaths, you got to make the top five. Number four is the aforementioned Howard Nutlick. I mean, he created a trade war single-handedly. Like, I guess two-handedly with Trump. There's also this insane Vanity Fair story people should read this week, which is like he has gotten himself and the Department of Commerce involved in this like real estate deal with the pied-à-terre issue, and he's kicking Tori Burch out of her house. Like, he's wrecking havoc everywhere he goes, and his kids are corrupt, and Howard Nutlick is number four. He's back in the rankings. I think in my very first ranking, he was in there. Hasn't been in for a while. Number three is Todd Blanche. You kind of covered this. I mean, having the Department of Justice be an arm of the president's vengeance, it's extremely bad. And in any other administration, Todd Blanche would be far and away the worst attorney general option. And all we can do is hope that he suffers the same fate that Nixon's attorney general suffered. Number two is Pete Hegseth.
Okay.
Which we didn't really cover that much in yours, but like we both have him in the top two. He changed the name of the Department of Defense Department of War, started one war, lost it.
So, well, you put it that way, yeah.
I don't know what else to do really with him. Like, he was in Iowa, he's doing push-ups. He's like has this new thing where he keeps saying trannies, like he thinks that's gonna help. He's like, oh, if I use a pejorative about trans people and talk about how tough our military is and how we have real men, real fighters, and it's just like, man, maybe you'd be better off if you had trans people running the military, because what's going on right now is a fucking disaster. People are jumping off ships. So Pete Hegseth too. And as you mentioned, my number one is Rubio.
You love shitting on Rubio.
I'm sorry. Yeah. He is the national security advisor. Like, Marco Rubio is the Secretary of State and the national security advisor. Yeah. I think he might also be like the Grand Marshal of the Supreme Court or like the auditor of the post office or something.
Too. Yeah.
The archives. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what's happening at the archives. I'm sure it's not going well because nothing he's doing is going well. Like everyone just kind of wants to act like, oh, he's the fixer in here. He's the serious one. Marco's one people turn to. Based on what? Like the job of the Secretary of State is to be the chief diplomat. How are we doing in diplomacy right now with our allies? Has Marco done really a great job of navigating diplomacy with our NATO allies? No, they all hate us. How about our Middle Eastern allies? They're all begging Trump not to continue escalating the war that he started. The Kuwaitis are like, what the fuck is happening? We had thought we were close allies, and now like the Iranians are bombing our infrastructure. We might have to kick your military bases out of our country. That Kuwait started talking about that this week. They might kick our soldiers out of the country. And then how are things going in Central America? Well, we're doing coups. Most of all the governments besides El Salvador hate us. In Argentina, we'll see what happens there. We're bombing things in the Gulf of Mexico, in the Caribbean. What are the points to point to from the diplomacy side of things where he's improving things? I mean, I guess we're improving relationships with North Korea, but that seems to be a one-to-one Trump to Kim Jong-un thing. South Korea, they hate us. Like, so Marco has totally failed as chief diplomat, as Secretary of State. National Security Advisor, I would think, would be the main advisor for the stupidest war that I've ever thought of. I went back and re-listened this morning to our podcast from before the war started. I had Jonathan Chait on it. Before it started, I was literally on the show being like, I don't understand this. There's no objective. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What are these guys doing? Marco Rubio was the national security advisor that advised Trump, you would think, to get us into this war that had no objective and that's been a total disaster. At least J.D. Vance has been leaking that he was against it privately. Marco, I kind of half-ass leaked that he was worried about this, but it seems like he didn't do anything to stand in the way of it. He's still the national security advisor. Do we feel more secure right now? Is he doing a good job at that? Like Marco has been just an utter catastrophe. I guess the only thing people would point to is that the coup in Venezuela was like successful from a military standpoint, but we'll see how that goes long term. I don't think things are going that great in Venezuela right now. For me, it's not like a mark of a good thing that we did a coup and now we're stealing oil from another country. Like, okay, that's the feather in his cap that he's going to run for. Everybody's like, JD's such a clown. Marco is really the guy to watch out for. What record is Marco running on? The worst foreign policy since the Iraq War? Sorry, Bill.
Yeah, but the National Archives has never been better.
Fuck Marco. That's where we're at. He's doing a horrible job. Marco, Hegseth, Blanche, Nutlick, RFK Jr.
I'd have to check the archives, but I think that's the first time we've had Rubio as your one. So this is new ground here.
Welcome to the list, Marco. Welcome to the top of the list. So people can vote in the comments on who made a more compelling case for their list. Do you have any critiques of mine? Anything you want to push back on?
Those are solid. And you're making me reconsider, Marco. That's a very valid case.
Thank you. It was tough not to put Kelly Loeffler on the list. I mean, if you can't walk like a human, it's pretty concerning about what's happening inside the cabinet. Yeah. Honestly, if you hadn't seen it and you're an audio listener,
go watch it.
Please watch. Please do. Please come to the video and watch us. And then we get double counted. You know, that's nice. All right. We're on to the mailbag.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Pod's already been long. This is going to be a good show, long show. Do you got anywhere to be?
Probably.
Okay. You are the managing editor of the site, right? Well, that's not right. You're doing it.
Pulling up the calendar. Yeah, I got an 11, but I'll push it back. Don't worry.
Okay. You're the Marco of the website. I guess Jared Poland is really the Marco of the bulwark.
Jared is.
I want to start with number one just because it just kind of gets us ready for all this. Sarah had a very innocent question, which is, what's your go-to morning routine? Coffee, Twitter, sunshine, best wishes, Sarah. I thought it was interesting because Sam asked me to provide him the questions last night, but my morning routine is like this. I get up usually around 6:30, sometimes 7, and I don't leave the bed. Okay, I don't leave the bed. I have a great life. Listen to how amazing my life is. My husband, who gets up like the crack of dawn because he doesn't sleep, brings me an iced coffee.
Oh, come on.
And then I sit in the bed and I go, what are we going to talk about today? I'm reading the news. I'm reading all the newsletters. I'm creating an outline. And I sit there for 2 hours and then I tape the podcast at 9. And during that time, you know, I'm thinking about what you all are going to like. I'm having 2 iced coffees. I go and brush my teeth and put on a shirt like this Jacquemus shirt, and then I come upstairs And that's it. That's my morning routine. Sam must be much busier than me because last night at like 11 o'clock, he's like, where are my questions? And I'm like, you're going to get them in the morning when I do the outline. But you must have had a lot of things going on because you didn't review the outline until like 5 minutes before we started. So what's happening for you?
Slightly different morning routine. Okay. I get up, I go downstairs, I cook my kids breakfast.
Horrible.
No, I don't mind
that. Sounds horrible.
You know, I got a dog, let the dog out, make sure the dog pees. Discovered that because the dog's urine is absolutely destroying my lawn, I often then have to take a hose, pocket hose, and spray the lawn, like just to wash out the urine. This is all in the morning. Then, you know, get my coffee, sit down, make sure that with my wife, my loving wife, make sure that the kids' lunches are prepped for school. Jump into morning shots.
Seems like she does the lunches and you're just there for quality control?
No.
Okay.
No.
The way you said make sure the lunches are done, it kind of
quality control.
Just the way you phrased it.
She might. There's a couple of implications there that my wife is absolutely burning the shit out of our kids' lunches and I got to make sure. That's not true. Then I get on the computer. I got to make sure the morning shots is decent, or at least I hope it's decent.
Our morning newsletter. Sign up at theblog.com.
Yeah, absolutely sign up. It's a great newsletter. We spend a lot of time working on the headlines, as Tim is aware. And then I drive into work and make a couple phone calls to reporters to talk about what they're working on the way into work, get into work, and do my 10 a.m. call. Oh, sorry. Wow. I forgot. I also walk the kids to school. So I got
kind of late. You show up at 10 a.m.
No, yeah, I show up for the 10 a.m. call.
That sounds like a peaceful morning. One thing I forgot to mention, just because I don't want to, it feels rude because I don't leave the bed, right? So it's like hard to nitpick my husband when he's doing all those things that you do. But there's a lot of yelling, like between the two of them. Are your shoes on?
Brush your teeth.
And I'm like, I'm doing my outline. Shut up. They're blaring Dolly Parton this morning, you know, Kesha often.
That's nice.
So is yours peaceful or do you have yelling also?
No, and it's not peaceful ever. And okay. Usually it sort of just falls all apart about 10 minutes before they need to get out the door. One of them doesn't have socks and the other one has to go poop. They start screaming at each other. The dog's getting a little antsy. I forgot to feed the dog, so I got to go feed the dog. You know, there's always like chaos right there. And then you start getting like anxious, like, okay, we got to get out the door.
Can I get out the door? What a pleasant morning. One thing that doesn't happen is drinking. I had some people that have been suggesting from time to time that I'm drunk on the podcast or that a guest is. There's never a drunk guest. We tape this podcast at 9 a.m. Central Time. Okay, everyone, so just if we're getting a little loose, it's just because we're creating fun content for you guys. Yeah. Okay, question two. That was from Sarah. Thank you, Sarah, for caring about our lives. We're getting sillier from here. This is Nick in Erie, Pennsylvania. It was this email from Nick that prompted me to say we've got to do another mailbag. Just so you know, it's such a good email. So we'll start with him. Shout out, Nick. Not sure why Scott Bessent can be so triggering. Obviously, there's the smugness and smarminess. But also, he sounds like his mouth is full of saliva when he talks. I think there might also be something about someone who either thinks they're good on TV or just likes being on TV but isn't good at all. Can't put my finger on it. Also, I have an indelicate follow-up question. Could you give special dispensation to the Straits to use the F slur for Bessent? I think you have the authority to do that, Nick and Erie. I do have the authority, and I will field that in a second. Sam, what do you have any thoughts?
He raises an interesting question about who... Well, does he sound... I can't tell if he sounds like he's got his mouth filled with saliva.
kind of does.
Kind of, yeah. But, like, who are other people who... Well, I think they're good on TV, but are not good on TV.
Sam.
And I noticed in the Google Doc notes you said me. So thank you for that.
You're so much better on YouTube than on TV. And it's a compliment. This is why people come here to theblog.com.
I guess. I feel like I'm good on TV.
You're pretty good. You're like a B okay. on TV, but you're I'm an A here. TV. You know.
I'm an A on YouTube. Okay. I thought C the plus. Obvious answer here... Fuck up. I thought the obvious answer here was J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
Right? Like JD is someone who has supreme confidence.
There is a JD and Bessent parallel across all of those things. Like they're both extremely smug and smarmy and condescending.
Yeah.
They both think that they're way better than they are, you know, and you can kind of see them laughing at their own jokes and like, and for JD, it's more like laughing at his own jokes. For Bessent, it's more like you can see him kind of smirk at how clever his little maneuver is. Like he thinks he's come up with a clever little spin on whatever. Right. terrible economic news there is when he goes on TV, thinks he's got one over on Kristen Welker, and that is off-putting.
I'd also put Stephen Miller in the category, but I don't think Stephen Miller thinks he's good.
I don't think
TV.
He thinks he's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just mean. He's condescending in a way, but it's kind of in a. There's something about the smarminess that he doesn't. He can't even get that. He can't even reach that register. You know.
Yeah, I got you.
Like Scott and JD think they're pulling one over on you.
Yeah.
Steven doesn't. Steven he's doesn't. Just like
he's just going.
He's just
going
for send the Browns back. Okay.
Yeah.
To the question of whether I can give dispensation to the Straits to use the F slur, I do have that power.
Congrats.
And I take it seriously. And I thought about this. I laughed because if there ever was somebody that deserves the F slur, it's really Scott Bessent. I mean, he encapsulates the word in every possible manner, like the way that he carries himself. He used to live in a Barbie house. Like he's almost like a stereotype of, like in a different era, he would have been on the TV show as like the rich uncle that is always a confirmed bachelor, that they don't ever say that he's gay, but he has all of the gay stereotype traits. So like you want to say it so bad. And I have bad news for you, Nick. Only I get to do it. Sorry. Sorry. Only other gays get to do it. It's close.
I thought you were going to give him the green light.
I know. I wanted to give it to him. But unfortunately, we've got to protect our ability to say the F slur. And okay. Yeah, I was in the LSU tailgate once a couple years ago, and I was kind of in a little small group of like my closest friends and then a couple of their friends. And one of them dropped the F slur to make fun of, I think, the opposing team's coach or player. And I looked at him and I was like, eh. And you know, he looks back at me and it's like, well, I thought we were cool though. And I was like, you know, Blake and Grant could do it. Like they're in the inner circle, but like you're not there yet. You know, you gotta really protect it. So Nick, maybe you can grow into it. Sam, the next two questions are for you.
Okay.
But I'm going to weigh in on the first one. Okay. You had a show, this is from Joe and Casper. You had a show called Candidate Confessional. He's a big fan. I talked to losing candidates and staffers about their races. Talked to me once, actually, about the John Huntsman race, I believe.
No, we talked about Jeb.
Did we do Jeb? And there were two questions you had.
Because I talked to Huntsman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I think I'm going to connect you with Huntsman and did Jeb. Yeah. I think that's what happened. Yeah. Two questions from Joe. Which of those losers ran the worst campaign? As in, they may have been able to win had they had a better strategy. And number two, as a Jew, you've never experienced the joy of a real confessional. And he's wondering if you want to confess to your Catholic priest, Tim, right now.
So it's hard to say who ran the worst campaign because they all lost.
Right.
Like the most torturous, there's different variations of this as I was thinking about it. One of my favorite episodes is, and this is actually appropriate because we talked about Doug Ford. Mm-hmm. His brother, Rob Ford, famously was caught buying or taking crack, and it was a remarkable scandal, and yet somehow managed to win the mayorship of Toronto, even with that happening. And we interviewed the guy he beat. Like, how do you lose to Rob Ford when you, like, got caught with crack? But that wasn't even, like, the guy had a compelling reason for why he lost, which is that, you know, it was very hard to actually attack Rob Ford for the crack because people were like, yeah, you know, he fucked up, but we all fuck up. So I would just say, in terms of, like, the looking back at all the interviews we did for that series, and I loved that series, and I'm kind of want to bring it back. The obvious answer is when we interviewed Ron Klain about Al Gore.
That is a race where it feels like if you did two things better, you really could.
It's exactly. There's a very, like, it's not just a butterfly effect. It's like 50 butterfly effects, right? It's like there's just little things here and there. And if we had just filed it this day and like done this. And he thinks about it all the time. He's like, of course I think about this stuff. And that, of course, obviously the consequences of that are profound.
Yeah. I'm going to do my answer to this too, of the races I was in, since I didn't make it a confessional. Fred Thompson is the answer. The 08 primary was so, like, he really could have won. Nobody liked any of the candidates, the Republicans in the field. The Democrats, this was kind of proto Tea Party. Democrats conceivably could run up against this next time. But it's like McCain, it's Mitt's first time, it's Rudy is still pro-choice Rudy. And then the conservatives were like Huckabee, who's just like, you're not going to make Huckabee your nominee. Like there wasn't anybody that was like the perfect fit to get the kind of populist or the Christian voters or the, you know, Chamber of Commerce voters and get them all together. Fred Thompson comes in late and kind of like has it. Like, he's celebrity. Like, had he done some culture war stuff and like really tried, I think he could have been the nominee. But he ends up like wearing $400 floor shine shoes to the Iowa State Fair and like riding around in a golf cart, and he doesn't even try, and like he doesn't learn anything. And on the debate stage, he looks like Admiral Stockdale. So I'd be him. If you've enjoyed this and want more flashbacks, me and Bill have decided we are going to do the 1994-2006 retrospective episode for the Labor Day podcast. So we're going to do a midterm preview looking back at past waves. People wanted it. I've heard from many people. Question two is, you've never experienced the joy of a real confessional. What would you like to confess to Father Tim?
I think the question was that what sin would I confess to? And it is something that's kind of haunted me a little bit. And it's a crime. And it's not like, I wouldn't say it's totally victimless, but it's somewhat victimless. And it's a great shame, in fact, in my family that I got caught doing this. But back when I was in D.C., when I was very young and I was not making much money in this industry, and I was obviously in the news, occasionally, every now and then, I would go into a bodega on Sunday and I would steal the Sunday New York Times. It was very expensive. And I was like, I can't spend this money, but I also need this information. So I was like that guy in Les Mis taking bread.
Winona Ryder.
I mean, I was bad.
You're stealing the New York Times?
You asked me for a confessional. And
that is the nerdiest confession I've ever heard in my life. That you didn't steal any cigs or a 40?
No, I didn't. I if I wanted cigs, I'd have a friend, an older person, buy them for me. But I got caught by my parents doing it once.
How?
They saw me steal it. They're like, did you pay for that? I was like, no. I was like, news should be free, right? I was working for HuffPost. So I made like some intellectual argument about it. Anyways, I'm embarrassed by it.
News should not be free. Subscribe to thebulwark.com totally today. You are a grown-up when you're doing that. Wow, what a bad boy.
I confessed.
I've been having some wrong thoughts.
You know, everyone says confessional makes you feel good. I just feel worse now. No, I feel much worse about it. I wish we can edit that out.
You should feel good. Now it's off your chest. You're going to feel good later. There's a period of time where you're embarrassed, then you get over the embarrassment, and you're like, ugh. That was freeing, kind of like right now.
No wonder
I'm
Catholics
about to say,
live in guilt and shame. This is awful.
It's horrible. Yeah, you're right. I don't know why I'm spinning it. It's terrible. I've had some wrong thoughts about Nikki Haley's son lately. Okay, moving on. We'll save the last one directed just at Sam for the very end. Two more fun ones. I like to shout out the people that send creative emails. This is Earl. Earl says this: in an alternate universe, Natalie Harp would have made an incredible kindergarten teacher. Her devotion to the children would be unmatched. She would constantly have a positive attitude. She also has experience dealing with a man with the mentality of a 5-year-old. Plus, she probably has experience with the occasional potty in the pants situation. What are other jobs for people in the cabinet and extended universe?
That's a brilliant email. And
great
honestly,
email, Earl. Thank you, Earl.
Fantastic.
I want to object, though. It's funny. It's a funny email. The premise is funny. But like, if Natalie Harp was my kid's teacher, we would be transferring schools mid-semester. I'd be like, this is too creepy.
And well, knowing what you know about her now, yeah. But if you just happen to stumble upon her, you'd be like, oh my God, she's so caring. And she's carrying this printer. She's carrying this portable printer for little Johnny's work.
Printer?
Yeah, no, little Johnny gets a printout every day. I have one. I have a.
Okay.
So I thought about this a little bit. You know, I could have done like stupid, spoofy stuff like, oh, Stephen Miller should be a Rogaine spokesman. But the real one is Hegseth. I think you'd be fantastic as a gym teacher who like sells Coke on the side, you know, like. Right? Like, and you could see it too. Like, he's telling you, he's getting your kids to like climb the rope, and then he's selling weed to like the seniors in the parking lot. He would have been great at that.
Yeah. White school, though.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. That's my personalized experience here.
Okay? A white public school. Yeah. I think that's right. That's a good one. Pete Hegg said this gym teacher. I have three.
Okay.
I mean, the one's most obvious. Howard Lutnick is just a used car salesman. And you can see him on the TV with the ads. Lutnick doing the ads as a regional car dealer. Perfect. Was meant to be a regional car dealer.
What would his tagline be? Come get your nuts licked with Lutnick.
It'd be something related to the truck nuts.
Sure, yeah.
You know, truck nuts, nutlick. Someone come up with something good. Okay. Scott Bessent, antique dealer. Scott Bessent is an antique dealer.
Not just any antique dealer. He'd be the best. And he'd go, he'd go on those shows where they're like, getting all these great discoveries. He'd be so fantastic at that.
Yeah, you'd feel really good if you went to an antique shop and you saw Scott Bessent. Lastly, RFK Jr., voice actor. Voice actor
awful,
for RFK
Jr. You can only do one
role. It's very unique. You need a bad guy needs a very unique voice. I mean, who else could do the RFK Jr. voice?
Yeah, Hollywood's like, I guess we got to go to RFK again. He's got that one voice.
Yeah. Great jobs. All right. We've also got here, this is from Clayton. If all members of the Bulwark were arrested by the administration and you could only get one of them pardoned, who would you pardon and how much Trump coin would you buy to make it happen?
I thought a lot about this. I have three criteria.
Okay. Wow.
Three criteria to determine who deserves all the Trump coin in the realm for their pardon. Okay.
Okay.
Do they have a lengthy-ish life ahead of them if they get pardoned?
You mean No. More boomer slander.
Excuse me.
On this podcast, we honor
you can take your turn, but like Bill, if Bill got a pardon and there's not as much time as Andrew.
Oh, come on. We honor every day equally. Disagree with you.
Second criteria. Could they handle being in prison or not? Do they have a steely resolve or do you need to get them out of there? Like that's an obvious criteria. And third is, would they make a profound post-pardon contribution to society?
Wow.
Okay? And I went through everyone on the list, and it was very clear. I went through the entire staff. I went through the masthead. It was very clear who hits all these criteria and who would be the best to receive the pardon.
There was no runner-up. I just because you took this so seriously, I do want to just...
Do you want to know who it is?
I'm wondering if there was a runner-up, though.
No, it's far and away obvious to me. Okay. Again... Do they have a semi-decent life ahead of them for the pardon? Could they handle being in prison or not? And would they make a profound post-pardon contribution? I deserve the pardon. I'd send it all on myself. I hit all the criteria.
What contribution would you be making in the post-pardon world?
We're already at 1 hour and 5 minutes. There's no need to list all that. Take too long.
I have two criteria. One, Catholic guilt. And two, would that person be able to get me out? Because I didn't consider myself. You know, would they have the skills and the wherewithal to be able to get me out? And that left me with two candidates.
Okay.
Producer Ansley Skipper, who I brought here.
Smart.
And I was like, I would feel really bad if she was still in the detention camp. I mean, she had a good life. Young person, life ahead of them. I'd feel bad. But then I was like, oof. Lawyer Heather, also a good opportunity because she would really make it her life's duty to get me out after I saved her, I think.
Yeah,
both lesbians. Lesbians are very resourceful also. So both would be interesting choices. Your second category, could they survive in prison though? Lesbians would do well in prison. So that makes me think maybe I should also pick me.
We picked ourselves.
No. All right. Rapid fire. This question is, how about Roger Clemens not being in the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown, New York, all because a bunch of jealous people with far less talent voted that he shouldn't be there? He was also not convicted or admitted to taking drugs. Roger is one of the greatest pitchers of all time. No wonder baseball is in trouble. That came from Donnie in Queens.
Oh, Donnie, first time, long time. No. Do we have to engage that? Roger Clemens
was Donald Trump bleated that yesterday.
I know.
He bleated that yesterday.
I was trying to figure out why. Like, was Roger on TV or something like that?
Roger's probably MAGA now. Roger fucking sucks. I would trade any person that was not a violent criminal who is currently in a detention center for Roger Clemens in a heartbeat. Just snap my fingers. I would send Roger to Dilly and take out Edgar Yana. Very easy choice for me. All right. The final question is about you in particular. Actually, we never get life advice, so I'm going to do the one life advice question really fast.
Sure.
Mike in Nebraska. This 100-year-old Omaha house I'm in is a big old money pit. This week, it's the water heater. Last month, it was the kid's bathroom toilet leaking to the bathroom below. I'm tempted to just move and go rent, but we got that sweet 2.75 COVID finance rate. A bigger city like Chicago or the Twin Cities to rent downtown for a few years till the kids go to college could be great if we can find high schools. I don't know. AI and our future jobs and economy, it's all scary out there. You asked for life advice, and I just rambled. Love the shows. Mike in Nebraska. That's tough.
You want me to handle this in rapid fire? I don't know.
What would you tell Mike in Nebraska if he asked you for your advice on that?
I guess the only thing I would say is that the grass isn't always greener. That rate is fucking dope. I'm at 3.25. Okay. It's awesome. And yeah, houses are money pits. And I'm dealing with a leaky roof right now myself, which is annoying. But you have to understand that comes with a biz. And you just salvage it until you get to the next problem. So, stay put for a little bit. Let's hope that things get a little better, but I don't know anything else other than what you send me about your circumstances.
I have a couple thoughts. A lot of people are in this circumstance, and it's an underrated reason why people hate the economy right now. People feel very stuck. The interest rate situation is so bad, and Trump could have gotten what he fucking wanted, which was lower interest rates, if he had just done nothing except golfed. And instead, every decision he's made has put more pressure on the bond markets, and interest rates are higher, and now everybody's stuck, and he's going to get punished for it politically. And that is a silver lining that you should think about, Mike, when you have a leaky bathroom. that Donald Trump is being punished at scale for other people suffering like you. But I don't know. You live in Nebraska. I don't know. I might sell that fucking house. Move to the South.
Slander Nebraska.
Move to the house. Rent. You know, you could get a great rental out here in like Kenner and Metro.
Come down to New Orleans. Real estate in Nebraska is much cheaper than anything.
Yeah, Baton Rouge, though. You could come to Baton Rouge, rent, go to LSU games with me on the weekend. Something to think about, Mike.
Yeah.
All right, final question is just for Sam, and it's from a former employee in the Valley. Why does Sam have a labradoodle? No offense to Martha, who is very cute, but why is it now a rite of passage for bougie podcasters to get a labradoodle? It was odd enough when Jon Favreau, Tommy Vitor, and John Lovett all decided simultaneously that they should get the exact same kind of dog, a labradoodle. But I thought we'd moved on from that. Why not a nice, ugly mutt from the pound? Genetic attributes not bespoke enough for you? You know who I bet has a labradoodle? Stephen Miller.
Oh,
I'll hang up and listen.
Ah, that last one was harsh. Real windup. Long story short, we had a beagle, a mutt beagle, not a purebred, for 12 years. He was 14 when he died. Rest in peace, Bennett. He sucked. I loved him to death, but he was just awful. He bayed. He was food obsessive. He, towards the end of his life, was peeing all over the floor. Mm. And he shed. And the shedding part was the key.
This is kind of like Trump, really.
We needed a Natalie Harp for him. And we didn't have a Natalie Harp, but we gave him a lot of love and care. And I loved the little guy so much. And when he passed, I didn't really want to get another dog for a while because it tore my heart out. Like, I lost my buddy. And my kids were really upset. And then for a couple of weeks, it felt really good to, like, not have a dog. And then my wife was like, you know, I said it would be a couple of years, but what about, like, 6 months? I was like, oh. Really? And then the next day she came and she's like, you know, and I said 6 months, but what about 6 weeks? I was like, what the hell? And then she's like, what about 6 days? And so eventually I was like, look, fine, we can get a dog. But she's like, actually, there needs to be a condition. I can't deal with all the hair. It's causing, like, you know, my throat to clench up and it's just everywhere. Labradoodles don't shed. It's like the one breed that really doesn't shed. And so we decided that we were going to get a dog and we decided to do a labradoodle. And we have Martha now, and Martha is the best, and I love her to death, and I have no qualms or regrets whatsoever about getting the dog of the podcasts.
I got to tell you, I think you're going to be sleeping in the guest room tonight, because I think the person that's caught the most strays on this podcast is your
my
wife.
My wife?
You're making breakfast. You're walking the kids to school. It's her fault that you couldn't get the dog you wanted.
No.
Just saying what I'm hearing.
My wife is an unbelievable wife, and I love her to death. And I'm so glad she made us get that dog. I love the dog. It was one of the great decisions we made. And I am so grateful that she walks the kids to school, including this morning, which I didn't do. I do supervise lunch making. I'm not going to lie about that.
That's Sam Stein. He's the managing editor. He's former New York Times thief.
Thief. I will pay them back. I'm a subscriber now. So
we'll be back tomorrow. We'll have a laugh or two, but we'll have some more serious fare But it's going to be good. So please come back for tomorrow's weekend podcast. We'll see you all then. Peace. Thanks, Sam.
Bye.
Bulwark Daily is brought to you thanks to the work of lead producer Katie Cooper, associate producer Ansley Skipper, and with video editing by Dante DiCicco and audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.